Well, good morning, church.
Good morning.
Good to be here. Of all the images that you might conjure up about how important it might be to get a particular message from one place to another, there is none that's more evocative, I think, than the one that is encapsulated in the idea of a message in a bottle. By now, some of you are already off for the next few minutes singing a song by the Police, and you're forgiven for that. But the sense of someone bothering, desperate enough to get a message to someone else, that they might roll it up, put it in a bottle, cork it up, and leave it to the way the wind and the waves might take it, particularly on a day like today, speaks about a desire to make communication. And that's what's happening in this reading from 1 Corinthians this morning, and indeed in the words of Jesus in Matthew's Gospel, as he offers his basic instruction to his first followers about how to live as God's people. But this is a really important message, and the way the message is told to these people who hear it. And bear with me a moment as we quickly, on a cold, wet, windy morning, take a quick trip to some Mediterranean sun-kissed shores. I mean, I'm sure you'll forgive me just for a moment. Because, as we've said once or twice before, Corinth was a special place. There it is on the peninsula between the Greek mainland and the Peloponnese, sat on an isthmus. Can we have the next picture, Stuart, which shows it? A remarkable place, a place that bridged all sorts of places and ideas, a place where all sorts of thoughts came together, and a place where all sorts of people with ideas shared them, and many of them were adored and recognized. And to a place like that, Paul speaks about the manner in which he came, and that being different. So it was with me, brothers and sisters, when I came to you, I did not come with eloquence or human wisdom as I proclaimed to you the testimony about God, for I resolved to know nothing while I was with you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. Paul's just been speaking to them about the fact that as a group of people, they were a real mixed bag. Some, but not many, were amongst the people who were well regarded and well known in the city, but most were not. And the manner that Paul meets them in, it is really important. Corinth was a society, in one sense, very different from ours, and in another way, quite similar. And we need to get that in our minds as we hear the way these letters are written. Paul was writing in response to at least two groups of people who gained some influence in the church. There were Greek teachers who took the elegant marketplaces and areas of the city as their stage to speak. They were authority figures. Am I right? The next slide is a picture of Corinth. I think it is, isn't it? Yeah. They stood amongst these majestic buildings when they all stood. And they spoke to those who were willing to listen. authority figures, well-versed in the literature of the day, witty, clever speakers, sharp orators, dispensing wisdom to an attentive audience. Not unlike some people's image of a good preacher. We might do well to recognise that that image doesn't come from the gospel, but from that society's influence. Then there was a group who could be found in almost any first century Mediterranean city who taught that the physical world is basically awful and the spiritual world is wonderful. Unfortunately, they said, we live in a physical world, but by gaining special knowledge, gnosis, they called it, we can relate to the spiritual world and become better people and separate ourselves from all that's wrong in the world. It's funny, isn't it, how many Greek philosophers and Gnostics you can still find amongst people who are wanting to be the followers of Jesus. Paul has to combat that and to say to these people in Corinth to be neither shaped by the world nor formed by it, but instead to march to a different drum and be positively, attractively different. And so the manner that Paul adopts is not to be one of the smart alecks, but instead to work in humility and to stick to one message that focused away from him, not as the performer or the clever wit, not the person who today will be seen sitting on the sofa on the late night TV show, destroying everybody else with their sharp words. Instead, Paul recognizes that he has been set free to live in a different manner, a manner that points away from himself and to Jesus. It's the path of being a servant and of humility, of letting go and letting God form us into the person he would want us to be. John Stott, who for several decades was rector of All Souls Langham Place, right next door to the BBC, a kind of remarkable kind of Christian church right at the heart of the culture in our land, puts it this way: at every step of our Christian development and in every sphere of our Christian discipleship, pride is the greatest enemy and humility our greatest friend. It's very easy to stand on our laurels, to polish up our halos, to want to look good, and for that to be the measure of our well-being and of our life. But not for us. Like Paul, the manner is to point away from ourselves to Jesus, who gave up everything to come and be among us. And that brings Paul to the heart of his message. And he wants to speak about something else, the cross of Jesus. For I determined to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. In a world full of pressures, in a world that has so many things for us to aspire to, You need look no further than any of the weekend editions of the papers or a website to find something that will say to you, this is how you can have the perfect life. In those rare things on a high street, a bookshop, go in and you'll see that the self-help section is brimming with 1,001 ideas of how you can be the best you. You need to be a little bit cautious for several reasons. One is some of it's a lot of nonsense. And the other thing is probably if you go along and look at four or five books in the bookshop, you'll find at least three or four contradictory sets of statements. Because like most books on all sorts of things, the author has focused on themselves and what worked for them. So they might as well write, if you're a person just like me, then this might help you. Paul's message is a different one. He looks away from himself, not just for humility, but for the effectiveness of all that Jesus has done. Jesus managed to walk the earth and be intimately involved with it all, and yet not shaped and squeezed by it. He paid heavily for it when people rejected his clear goodness and sent him to the cross. But Paul, who'd spent 30 years of his life trying to become absolutely perfect, discovered how far short he fell and saw that another message was the one that would set him free. Jesus warns us, of course, if we want to follow the self-help route, he offers those quite daunting words in the Sermon on the Mount when, as his disciples, to discourage them from thinking they could just become better by themselves. When he says, I tell you, unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven. Anyone trying to get there under their own steam needs to know the bar is not just set high, it's set impossibly high. You've probably all seen one of those sporting occasions where someone was trying with all their might to jump the longest jump of their life or the highest jump of their life. They did it once in a practice, and now in the public arena with thousands of people before them, they trip, they stumble, they crash, and they look totally defeated. There's bad news and good news in this message. The bad news is that the bar is impossibly high. We cannot reach it. But the good news is that in Jesus there is the offer of God's love. In Jesus, the God who made everything has reached out to you and to me. And through you and me, he reaches out to the whole world. In the ruins of Coventry Cathedral, the old Coventry Cathedral, there is a small bronze statue of two people embracing each other. A reminder in that place torn apart by a past conflict that the reconciling love of God can change things, that the gospel accomplishes and achieves what human effort can't possibly do. The gospel mends what the world breaks. As the people of the gospel, as the people who, like Paul, point away from ourselves in a broken world, we have the opportunity to be the living embodiment of something different. We do not have to be held by the past. The past does not have to determine the future. And so Paul speaks about a means, a manner of humility, following the Jesus who gave up all of heaven and then gave up all that the earth has to offer, of a message that changes the world, and the glorious opportunity that it's not just about the past but the future. Paul speaks about the kind of wisdom that fires us is not about how smart we are, but about how gloriously, incomprehensibly wonderful is the offer of God for now and for all eternity. That's not to say everything's always going to be fine. We all know that. I only need to look round here to know that if I tried to peddle that cheap, ridiculous message, oh, and by the way, there were people in Corinth peddling that message, that you would all rightly call me out. And Paul's own life was not one of continual victory. Later on in his second letter to the Corinthians, he speaks about the way in which so much of life had assaulted him. But he lived in the light of a message that says, in Jesus, God embraces that and walks with us and will be our companion. The message is not the wisdom of the philosophers. Instead, to them, the message of the cross seems like folly because it means not being in control. But instead, in all that Jesus did, he works with and walks with us through all of life. The manner then, not authority, but humility. The message, not ourselves and all we can do, but Jesus and all he's done and offers and works through us. And the means of God at work in us. Of his word, a truth beyond ourselves, and of God's power and presence and personality, his Holy Spirit living in us, communicating God's love to us, making good in our lives the completed work of Jesus, fashioning in us the character of Jesus. Or as Paul puts it, my message and my preaching were not with wise and persuasive words, but a demonstration of the Spirit's power, so that your faith might not rest on human wisdom, but on God's power. That all that we are and all that we can be is the gift of Jesus to be received and worked in us. The character forming in our lives so that our lives can reflect the life of Jesus. So that we can be what Jesus says in that passage from the Sermon on the Mount we read, like some light. in the darkness. And like the tang and preservative of salt, how about it? Is this message and the manner of the one who came from heaven to bring it living in us? Are we being shaped to be more like Jesus? Do we recognize that in the many different places we will be this week, that we are those who have the enormous privilege of bringing more light than heat in a society marked by more heat than light? We can bring taste and preservation of all that's good in a society marked by decay and fractiousness. Imagine the difference each of us can make. Imagine what we have to offer. Imagine that you have far less before you than Paul had when he arrived with one or two companions seeking to win over a proud, prosperous city full of itself and its own ideas. All you and I have to be is those who live faithfully, not hiding our light, as Jesus says, not making sure our salt cellar is firmly put up on the top shelf out the way. We just have to be the person that Christ is calling us to be. Let him be at work through us in his spirit. How about it? Imagine what he can do through you. You see, that integrity of those who let go of being at the center is all we are called to. I'm deeply challenged by this quote from Edward Murrow. To be persuasive, we must be believable. To be believable, we must be credible. To be credible, we must be truthful. I invite you, as you come this morning and receive the bread and wine, these symbols of the dying and rising of Jesus, to place your trust once again in him, to know that it's not your faith, but the Jesus in whom you put your faith who makes the difference. And as we go, to go as those who look like light, taste like salt, and bring in our manner, our gathering as humble disciples who go, who hear the message of Christ and him crucified, of the Spirit and of the risen and ascended Lord, and that those living in us, setting us free from the past and empowering us for the present and the future, will lead us to grow so that you and I together may be those in whom God's Spirit is revealed and his truth known and his love shared and shown. Amen.